Hello.
Good to see you. Good evening. Yeah. It's good to see you folks.
Great to be here.
So, just as we're getting settled, for purposes of identification and welcome everyone, this is Heart of Freedom. I'm Doug Pullen, and this is supported and sponsored through Portland Inside Meditation Community. And it's a pleasure to have an opportunity to share practice with you this evening. So, just an invitation to get comfy, cozy, relaxed, and we can get started. And in a sense, there isn't really any beginning or end. We perhaps think of formal meditation as starting something, but it's really actually dropping in to something that's already here, that's it's coming back home, coming back to this place that in a sense we've never left. So yeah, it's an invitation to reconnect. And this reconnection starts right here with the experience of this body that sits. And so we can start with just bringing the focus in to body sensation. And if it's comfortable, to let your eyes close or just be softly downcast. And to be curious about what we discover, what's here. And it's often just settling. So to let the mind settle into the experience of the most predominant sensations that are here in our physical experience. So that could be points of contact where we feel the chair, the sitting cushion, maybe it's feet resting on the floor. So it's very simple, it's very immediate, it's right here. Yeah. Setting aside preoccupations, mental chatter, planning, and setting aside any expectations for what should be happening, and just dropping into what is happening in this moment. Sometimes we start to discover that there's discomfort or perhaps stress or tension. And if those places in the body where that shows up are a place where we can begin to explore with our awareness, that's wonderful to just notice and see if it's possible to let things soften. Maybe noticing places like neck and shoulders or face or chest, or perhaps it's more belly or diaphragm. See if it's possible to bring a kind and open and accepting presence to places that couldn't hold on to stress or tension. And it could be helpful to deepen the breath, intentionally take a deep and slow breath, and just let the breath be like a massage from the inside, just inviting any places where there's tightness or holding or tension to soften, and to experience the breath as a gesture of kindness, as the oxygen flows to all parts of this body. And to reflect on what it might mean to take refuge in this capacity to be awake, to be alert, and accepting. Traditionally referred to as taking refuge in the Buddha, taking refuge in our Buddha nature. And but it could mean to take refuge in the truth, the direct experience of the truth that we discover. Traditionally, taking refuge in Dharma. And what could it mean to take refuge in our mutual support that we offer? How can we experience the support of community as we come together this evening to make that real, to make that tangible? Traditionally referred to as taking refuge in the Sangha. And it starts with, and each moment is an opportunity to start again with this breath, this experience of breathing in, breathing out, as we accept and just allow the breath to breathe itself. So it's discovering in this moment, where is the breath as an embodied sensation felt? there is a simple but profound discovery that it's possible for this capacity to take refuge in presence to be cultivated. Then through a certain quality of effort, a certain intention to pay attention, that it can be strengthened, this capacity to return to our true nature, which is to be awake and accepting. That this can, through practice, be strengthened. So this experience of breathing in and breathing out, and the invitation to remember our intention to be present. And that includes everything that arises in consciousness. So if the most predominant sensation or object in consciousness isn't the breath in this moment, we can welcome and accept that, oh, there's this pain, or there's these thoughts, or this emotional state. So ultimately, nothing is excluded. Everything is welcome in this space, in this relationship. This relationship with this mind and this body, and this present moment connection with the universe, which comes to the sense doors. So just in case it's helpful as a reminder, the invitation is simple with this practice, to be here in the present moment and accept what is present, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant or perhaps neutral, whether it's any of almost limitless variety of physical or mental experiences. And to be present with our relationship with this moment. Is there resisting or clinging or accepting? Is there a sense of wishing for something different, or is there clinging to what's here? And to observe it clearly is to find freedom. It's not trying to change anything. It's really just allowing this moment to be just as it is. And with that clear seeing, there is non-identification. There's a shift, perhaps, out of being identified with the object of consciousness or the body sensation, to shifting to being the awareness, being the mindful presence, which makes room for whatever's happening. It's wonderful to see you folks this evening. Welcome. And if it would be helpful to take a minute to do a little mindful stretch or movement, yeah, feel free. And I'm going to just mention a couple of brief announcements as we transition into some checking in. And the first is, I think of it as a message from our sponsor, really, which is all of us. Everyone who comes, participates in this community, provides support. And so that's the practice of Dana, which is part of the three-legged stool that makes Dharma practice possible. And so thank you. Thanks for your participation, for your being here this evening, and for your generosity. And if you'd like to continue to participate in some forum, there's lots of volunteer opportunities at PIMC. You can check our website for opportunities. You can also participate in the forum of sharing Dana financially. So I've got a link in the chat section with a description and a connection to our virtual Dana Bowl. So there's that. Also, just to mention, coming up through the community at PIMC, there's a Sangha support team, which is forming. And it's a community care team of volunteers that are going to be supporting Sangha members who are in need. And if you'd like more information, you can go to our website for information about the Sangha support team. And then coming up on Saturday, December 2nd, there's going to be a day-long retreat with Candle Summers. It's called Shining the Light of the Dharma from 10 to 4 at PIMC. So those are a few things that I just wanted to mention, make you aware of. And but I'd like to give us a chance here this evening to get connected. It's totally optional, but if you'd like to share, to speak from your heart about what's most alive for you this evening. And so just a few words of, yeah, that expresses it. And when you're finished, if you just say, yeah, I'm done, and the next person can take their turn. And it's nice to hear people say their names at the beginning, so if you'd like to, that would be great. That's helpful in terms of translating over to Facebook so people who can't see us can, you know, hear that there's real live people here this evening. So it's all optional. I'll get us started. My name is Doug. And I'm feeling a little under the weather this evening, a little congested, a little sore throaty. But good energy. So I'm just grateful to be able to be here and find a way to speak through the congestion. So thank you. And I've spoken.
time, Adrian. And today I was sharing something quick. I read something that was pretty beautiful. It was regards to this book, Man's Search for Meaning. And one of the guys was in the Auschwitz camp, and he was talking about how one of the guards gave him an extra piece of bread out of the support and love for him, and how it wasn't just the act of giving the bread, but it was the act of love and the whole ordeal, and how that meant a lot of gratitude towards him. And I feel the same way, just how my community and my neighbors support, how we cook dinner for each other from time to time, and just that it just brings a lot of gratitude and connectedness. So yeah, that's what's alive in me today.
I'm Diana, and this is my first time here. I guess you can hear me. I'm up from Eugene, and I was so glad to sit with you tonight. I've had a practice, and I've gotten away from it, so I've been having a hard time slowing down to do it, to sit, and just almost an aversion to it for quite a while. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't get there. So I tagged, you know, I jumped in here, and I could do it. And I was so grateful to just be able to sit. And I felt basically what was happening for me tonight was I was feeling my body. I think when I've sat before, I haven't. I was more focused on my breathing. It's just I'm just starting to connect with my body more. And so tonight was a great. Got a lot of sensation, and I'm really grateful that you're here. Thank you. Yeah.
My name is Mel. My pronouns are they, them. Today is my birthday, and thank you. And it's actually so sweet to be sitting with all of you for my birthday. This is a great way to celebrate. My wife and I are both, that's Esme, my wife. We're all cooped up sharing COVID together. Yay. So we were going to be, we're planning to be on the beach this weekend with her knitting group, but it's turned out to be a very cozy birthday weekend at home, just us and COVID. But luckily it hasn't been too rough. For me, it's just some anxiety on my mind about my kiddo. She's off at her first term at college and really kind of just struggling in so many of the ways that kiddos struggle in their first term, and kind of having to learn all the lessons the hardest way possible. Like, how much alcohol is too much to drink? What happens if you don't go to bed on time? What happens if you don't do your homework? You know, on and on and on and on. What happens if you forget to eat? So, yeah, just sitting with that and just trying to send her love, and knowing that she's got to learn some of these lessons on her own. Well, actually, all of them on her own. So, thank you.
I'm Isabel. I wanted to share that I've been having some tougher practice sessions lately, just really fidgety and not very present and kind of unable to to focus and stay with the breath. And then tonight I felt a lot of ease and like I really dropped in the pocket, and it was so relieving. And I was sort of having a little mini celebration for myself. And then I realized that I was asleep. I actually fell asleep while I was sitting. So it was just a funny experience of thinking that I was really on my meditation game, and I was snoozing. So thank you. I've spoken.
I'm Esme. I use she, her pronouns. I'm so grateful that Mal invited me to sit with you all tonight. I don't usually sit on Thursdays, but between not just COVID, but I've had a rough couple days with insomnia because the world is just scaring me as a trans woman in this country right now. And so I just really needed to sit in some community, and I'm glad you all are here, and I'm glad I got to sit with you. Thank you.
I'm Kathy, and I have been kind of inconsistent with my participation in this Sangha, and just thinking that I'm probably going to continue to be consistent with my participation in the Sangha because of other things that get in the way, and I'm going to just have to accept it. Sometimes I feel I don't know what the right word is, some nostalgia or longing for some of the people who used to be regulars here, and they don't seem to be anymore, but then there are all these new people who are delightful too. And so going with the change and enjoying it, and glad to be here tonight, even though I haven't been here for a little while. Thank you. Oops.
So is there any other sharing that's just on the cusp of happening? Anybody just on the verge? Well, I can share a Dharma talk. I just wanted to share, Mel, I am honored that you chose to share your birthday evening with us. Yeah. So, that's wonderful. So, this evening, I thought I would share a little bit about how relationships can be a part of our spiritual practice. And I'm sure this will be just the tip, very, very tip of a huge topic. So, just maybe an invitation for you to remember what you already know, really. And fortunately for me, since I don't have much time to share the Dharma talk this evening, those touch points that can be resonant or help you remember what you already know are, that's the most important thing, really. It's not so much to learn something on an intellectual level, it's to remember in our hearts from our own direct experience what's true. So that's the spirit I invite you to listen this evening to this, to these words. And first I'd like to start with a poem. This is a Hafiz poem. And he says, admit something. Everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you don't say it out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this, this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye that is always saying with that sweet moon language what every other eye in the world is dying to hear. And in this poem, Hafiz is suggesting that we open our hearts to love, being it, living it, radiating it to everybody who would be ready to receive it. And in the deepest sense, in the deepest realization, there isn't anybody out there except us. So we forget that, of course, but there isn't anybody out there but us. We're so conditioned to see that we are a separate entity that it can be difficult to see that. And it looks like there's many other people out there. There's me, there's you, there's him, there's her, there's them. And on one level, that's true. There is apparent separate entities. And, you know, that's part of the experience too. But strictly speaking, from a spiritual sense, when we have direct insight into the nature of sense perception, when we see, like, if you imagine sense perception and the whole apparatus of consciousness like a movie projector, if there isn't mindfulness present and penetrating awareness, we get wrapped up in the drama. We get wrapped up on what's on the screen. Believe the story of separateness. Believe the drama that's being played out. And with the penetrating awareness, we observe the screen, the projector. We see the apparatus of consciousness. So that's where that realization leads us. So when we experience direct insight into the nature of sense perception, we actually move beyond our identification with labeling and naming, and there's and any sense of separateness, and we move into what's left, which is love. That's what's left. I'm just thinking back, this is probably 20 years ago or so, and I was back from a meditation retreat. I was back about a week or so from being on a retreat. And I was walking down the street, and I was looking at strangers, people I didn't know. And I was kind of making it a part of practice to notice what my experience was. Some days there would be lots of eye contact. There would be friendly smiles, people nodding hello, and life just seemed heavenly. On other days, no one would make eye contact. They just seemed kind of closed and shut down. And I was wondering what the difference was, why some days people were open and friendly and other days they weren't. What was up with that? Was it some planetary influence? Was it the position of the moon? Was there some dark force that closed people down that we didn't understand? And I finally noticed that the common denominator was me, was my mood state, was my state of consciousness. When I was feeling happy and radiating positive energy, people tended to respond in kind. When I was closed down, people also responded in kind. This may not sound like a earth-shaking discovery on an intellectual level, but to get in on an experiential level was quite amazing for me. And I woke up to what I refer to as the mirror aspect of life. That life is our mirror. What we see to a large extent is it isn't what actually is there. It's filtered through conditioning. It's filtered through perception. It's filtered through a state of consciousness, a mood state. It is a mirror because we're not separate from everything that we see, ultimately. There was this kind of mini awakening experience for me. And I learned to ask the question and answer the question like this: Doug, do you want more love? Be more loving. If you want more love, be more loving. Be what it is you seek. Be your true nature. It's helpful for me to remember that even though at times of darkness and despair, that cloud system of emotion that's passing through is, to the degree that it's illuminated, by the light of love, by the light of awareness. I wouldn't recognize it unless there was light there, even in the darkness. Relationships are a wonderful opportunity to experience the mirror aspect of things. One of the first meditation retreats I did with my teacher, Ruth Dennison, this was up at Brighton Bush Hot Springs, I was out doing walking meditation, and I must have looked pretty depressed or something. She walked up to me just out of the blue and whispered in my ear, you need to love yourself more. And it was true. And I didn't really at that point understand that the essence of the practice is that. And that to love ourselves is really to love others. There really isn't any difference. It's the same thing. And it's difficult if we haven't experienced that. I mean, if we haven't experienced unconditional acceptance, if we haven't experienced empathy and deep listening. I was talking with someone earlier today about difficult childhood experiences that weren't mirrored back, and where there wasn't a parent who was capable of that kind of empathy on a really basic level with an infant. It's if you're in distress, if you're crying and you can't use words, what's going on? And it's the caregiver's or the parent's job to try to intuit. And usually with infants, it's pretty simple. Have they been fed recently? Does their diaper need to be changed? Do they need some warm contact, some cuddling, or do they need sleep? Or maybe it's something that's playful. But infants only really learn about what they're needing from it being reflected back to them by a caregiver that's attentive. And nobody gets a perfect caregiver, of course. So we're all, to some extent, left with unmirrored needs and feelings that we have to figure out what to do with and how to identify as we grow older. That's just the nature of life, being human. Those early experiences with unfinished or unmet needs for mirroring tend to play out in later relationships. So because our earliest experiences with relationships, the ones with our parents and caregivers, have a big influence on, that conditioning that we talk about. So sometimes, without even knowing it, our early wiring, our mental conditioning, emotional conditioning, tends to do a lot of the talking and acting in our adult relationships, particularly when we get emotionally triggered. Most of the wiring in our brain areas that affects relationship was created or laid down by the time we're 18 to 24 months old. So, for instance, if we experienced fearful events, those are in there. There may not be words to describe them, but they're in there. Marcia Lucas, who's a developmental psychologist, neuropsychologist, said in the realm of relationships, that means that like fearful or painful or otherwise potentially unsafe memories from a long time ago are they're ready to help us avoid being hurt today. their function is to try to keep us safe, to not have those things happen again. Those kinds of memories tend to not be really recognizing the passage of time and other resources that we might have developed along the way. They're pretty impervious to change, at least at a superficial level. Fortunately, our really early childhood wiring isn't set in stone. We have a fair amount of flexibility because our brains are pretty plastic. So even as adults, we're able to create new connections and new neuro pathways. So, and here's some even better news for all of us. This practice that we're doing, mindfulness practice, heart cultivation practice, according to research, can help us make the most of neuroplasticity to rewire our brains. So what the Buddha discovered 2,600 years ago, modern neuroscience is now rediscovering. And there's research to support it. I'm not going to go in, there's tons of research, I'm not going to go into all the research, but just to say that they've been doing more and more research on people who are long-term meditators, and it changes your brain. This I'm sharing with you as a kind of a pep talk, an invitation for you, if helpful, to go back to the mental gym to do the work that really does make a difference. Now, you may not notice from one day to the next, but if you've been meditating for a while, if you look back, if you have journals that you did maybe 5 years ago, or just if you're a regular meditator, I challenge you not to notice a change. Things change, and we can set a destiny through the practice, and that can change our relationships. So, what does that mean for relationships? Well, paying attention on purpose in the present moment without judgment or with love can actually help us break out of negative knee-jerk reactions that we tend to bring into our relationships. So, and this is based on Marcia Lucas's research. She said, mindfulness helps to better manage the body's reactions, regulate emotions, calm fears and anxiety, it addresses relationship boosting skills, like instead of picking a fight with our partner or spouse after a stressful work day, it's possible to have a conversation about an important issue instead of our entire body shaking when our partner makes a snarky remark and spewing below the belt slurs. We might be able to respond, you still have your emotions, but they just don't hijack you. There's still anger there. It's not getting rid of the anger, but there's freedom to choose what we do or don't do with that. It changes everything, because then it makes it possible to talk about what we're feeling and needing instead of act it out in ways that are destructive. Marshall Rosenberg said in Nonviolent Communication, anger is often, when expressed aggressively, a tragic expression of need. Why is it tragic? Because the people that we love and care about or work with when anger is expressed aggressively, tend to only hear or experience the aggression, get triggered, and they don't understand what the underlying need is that's trying to be expressed. So we're thwarted in our attempts to try to express ourselves. And I want to be careful here, because anger gets a bad rap in spiritual communities, spiritual teaching. And anger in and of itself is just an affective state, just like any other emotion. And it's here to communicate to us about needs, often needs for boundaries or action, standing up to injustice, speaking out, in a forceful way, assertively. That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about reflexive, aggressive, non-productive anger. I have a friend who described anger metaphorically as being like gasoline. If you swallow it, if you try to repress it or deny it, it does harm. It can kill you. If you act it out explosively, it's destructive. It does harm. But there's a third option, which is that it can be, when understood with mindfulness and reflected on with self-compassion, it can be the energy that helps move things forward in a positive direction. Compassionate action sometimes starts with a mindful experience of anger, sadness, grief. We have to go through that in order to get to a place where we can channel it in a positive direction. And so in relationships with other people, it's not helpful to bury anger. And it also isn't helpful to act it out indiscriminately, but to understand it, really, and then to find skillful ways to communicate it. And there's lots of different ways of working with that. There's three reasons why mindfulness meditation helps relationships. The first one is it turns down the volume on our stress. So we can reduce the kind of background noise. So that we can actually be more aware or attuned to what's happening. I just finished teaching a basics of mindfulness class last week, and one of the models that I use there is something called the five concentric circles. And the first circle is the breath, which helps calm and stabilize consciousness. And then the next circle is body sensation, the third is emotions, the fourth is thinking, and the fifth is mental states. And in order to get to those outer concentric circles with mindfulness, we have to establish a core, a center of stability. When we get to those outer edges, emotions, thinking, mental states, it's exceedingly difficult to not get caught up and identified with what's going on there and pulled into our reactive ancient conditioning without that core, that center being there. So that's, in terms of relationship, that is, that stress, that the distraction needs to be attenuated so we can bring mindfulness to our experience. And then it creates the possibility of getting to know our partner better, or our coworker, or our friend. So that's the second thing. And so being able to notice what's happening here inside of me, I start to be able to take responsibility for it and ownership, so that I don't have to project it out onto other people. I don't have to, if I can't really recognize the anger that's here in me, in this embodied experience, then one of the tendencies is to see it in other people. That was part of my experience walking down the street. So taking ownership without judgment, without shaming, without making myself bad or wrong. In fact, the non-judgmental quality is what makes it possible to see it, not identify with it, but take responsibility for it. Then I can be more aware of what's going on for my loved ones. For I can tune into that capacity for empathy and understanding, and listen. And my stuff doesn't get in the way as much. And then the third thing, these are all interrelated, is there's a slowing down of reactivity. So there's between stimulus and response, there's conditioning. And in the unobserved mind, he stepped on my foot and didn't apologize. And immediately the mind and the mouth goes, "You blankety blank, you know, so and so." There's the reaction. With mindfulness practice, there starts to be space there. Between stimulus and response, there's conditioning. And so that's where it becomes really interesting in relationship. He doesn't do it to me. I mean, there's pain, but maybe there's something going on with him. He was distracted, or maybe he lost a moment of consciousness there and stumbled. Who knows what's going on? If I react with anger without observing, then I've, you know, basically gone into a reactive pattern, conditioned pattern. So there starts to be space that opens up for freedom to choose. And last thing I just want to mention briefly is another book. It's called How to Be an Adult in Relationships by David Rico. Probably some of you have read that book. And it's he talks about the five hallmarks of mindful loving and how they play out in relationships. And it seems really useful to me, directly from my experience. The first is attention to the present moment, observing, listening, and noticing the feelings at play in the relationship. The second is acceptance of ourselves and others just as we are. The third is appreciation of all of our gifts, our limits, our longings, and our poignant human predicament. We're all human and imperfect. The fourth is affection, shown through holding and touching in respectful ways. And then the fifth is allowing life and love to be just as they are, with all of the ecstasy and the ache, without trying to control it. Those are what Rico calls the five A's. They form the basis of mature relationships. Help us move away from judgment, fear, blame, to a position of openness, compassion, realism. So anyway, those are just some, again, invitations to remember what you know from your own experience might be true. So I thought I'd do a little, maybe I'll pause here for a moment. I won't do a guided meditation, but I think that'll dovetail with the end of our closing. So just to circle back, check in, see if there's anything that bubbled to the surface here, anything you'd like to share.
Hey Doug, it's Adrian. I just wanted to, that's something that's really been on my heart as of late. Recently, I just gotten over a relationship about a year ago, and then seeing that conditioning come out, and it really surprised me. And I'm like, oh wow, like I didn't know that was there. And then it made me really reflect on like the past and how I was brought up. And I spend a lot of time with myself and reflecting and meditating, and I do see the fruit in that, and I do feel I'm getting confident enough to get out and you know, just be open to the possibility of dating. And but there's also a fear of repeating that same pattern, falling back into a rut, relying on someone for edification, and I'm just in unhealthy ways. I guess, like, well, have you had similar experiences, and what would you recommend, like, as a way to navigate the dating world, or that's my question.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful question, and I'm sure I won't be able to do justice to it. There's so much there that I could say, but in this context, I would say, you know, to recognize that we cultivate a relationship with ourselves in mindfulness practice. And that we can, and that there's a parallel process between the relationship that we have with ourselves and the relationship that we have with others. So, being your willingness to see that there were things that didn't go as well as you would have liked, and to genuinely turn towards that with self-compassion and curiosity, can turn it from something that is a pattern that repeats itself into a pattern that becomes one that you learn from. Relationships are experiential curriculum. There isn't any other way to learn about relationships other than to be in relationships. And we all make mistakes. We all blow it from time to time. And so the invitation is to make mistakes mindfully, and to make room for that so that we can learn from it, and to step out of any stories of self-blame or shaming oneself, and really just look at it as a learning opportunity. And there's wonderful, you know, beautiful aspects of it, and there's also really painful things. And it's a package, and it's a package deal. So, like I said, I'm sure I'm not going to do justice to your question, but does that?
That does bring a lot of light. I feel sometimes like just seeing it, yeah, it's a lot of painful stuff, but I think with the help of meditation, kind of like how you said, there's a buffer between the stimulus and the reaction, and that buffer, it has been, especially within that work in different aspects, sort of like a way to kind of be curious. And that's something that that's been helpful with meditation, is to bring some curiosity aside from like anxiousness or fear. It's like, okay, like let's see what's here, and how can I respond or mindfully respond to this? And looking at that in that mindset is definitely very helpful. And I think that will also traverse into relationship territory. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Welcome. One simple thing it's incredibly simple, but also incredibly difficult when there's strong emotions that come up in relationship, is to breathe. Just take a breath. It's saved me incredible pain and suffering when I've just remembered to do that. Just breathe, maybe count to 10, take a long, slow, deep breath or two. And that's the creating the pause that maybe helps the amygdala, the midbrain emotional reactive part to calm down a little bit, to bring in a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of curiosity. Maybe I don't know what to do or say, but maybe I can pause. When there's strong emotions that get triggered in relationship, the most doable thing is the most simple thing. If it's complex, we probably aren't going to remember to do it. It takes practice. And so in sitting with difficult emotions, you know, just sitting in meditation is incredibly beneficial when they arise, because we learn the contours of that inner landscape, that experience, and we develop what's referred to in Western psychology as distress tolerance. Which is essential to not be reactive. And then the self-compassion part is so important, to recognize that we're all human, and of course we're going to lose it sometimes. And that's, you know, and then we try to repair and take responsibility. This practice is about, it's the ultimate taking responsibility practice. There isn't anyone else to blame. And when we get to a certain point, there's no self to blame. There's just causes and conditions. There's no self to blame. And if that doesn't make any sense, don't worry about it. I know it's time for us to wrap up. I wish I left more time for sharing. You can come back next week and I'll make more time. So I'd like to close with doing some metta practice, and in the context of what we've been talking about here, actually I'd like to share a quote. This is a quote from Dogen. To study this way, the Buddha way, is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be intimate with all things. When intimate with all things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of awakening remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. And yeah, and let that go. So in the space of present moment awareness, just to connect with yourself in this moment like you'd connect with a good friend. Notice, yeah, if there's any sense of unmet needs or wishes for well-being, wishes for health, wishes for safety, wishes for connection. Those are just a few. There might be, any number of needs that you would wish for yourself. Or there might be a sense of really contentment and satisfaction of needs being met. So to name those things too. Yeah, just to notice what's most alive for you with kindness, with curiosity. And is there anything you'd like to wish for yourself, like you would wish for a good friend? Maybe there's some words or there's a felt sense. And just letting that radiate throughout your being. It could be repeated. We can do a little cultivation here in the garden of our hearts. To water the seeds of, well, wishing. Let the wishes of well-being be extended as we strengthen this relationship with this mind-body process. With love and compassion. And that's the foundation then for relationships with others. And so I just invite us to extend our wishes to our group gathered here this evening, to our community, our Sangha. And imagine whether we know other Sangha members well or not at all, we all share the same human condition. And of course, when we really connect with that, of course, there's an intimacy and a heart opening. And so sharing wishes of well-being, that place where we meet, where there aren't any others, it's just us. And an extension just naturally can happen to other larger communities or other communities, our family, our friends, our loved ones, our work communities, and our neighborhoods, and on and on. So to whatever degree your heart feels able to expand this evening, we can, with the energy of the group, extend our wishes in all directions. And remember, ultimately, there aren't any others. There's just us. And so I invite you to close our evening together with me doing a chant. I'm not sure my voice is going to be very chant-worthy this evening. We'll see how things go. But you're welcome to unmute and join me in chanting, "May all beings be happy." And we'll do that three times. And then we could chant Sadhu, which means so be it, three times. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Sadhu. Yes, may it be so. So thank you all. Yeah, take good care. Take what's useful from our time. And anything that's not, just let it go. So you only take the good stuff. And hope to see you again next week.
Yeah. Thank you.
Lots of love.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye. Happy birthday, Belle.
Yep. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh, God.